Welcome to Birth on Film, a podcast discussing and analysing depictions of pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum in popular culture. We are your hosts, Emma, a midwife,
and James, her mid-husband, coming to you from Ngunnawal Country in the Australian Capital Territory.
Welcome to episode 4. This week we're covering Star Wars episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
It came out 2005. And is the third in the installment of prequel movies to the original three that were released back in the 80s.
The synopsis: Anakin joins forces with Obi-Wan and sets Palpatine free from the evil clutches of Count Dooku. However, he falls prey to Palpatine and the Jedi's mind games and gives in to temptation.
So there's a lot there, and the character that we care about most isn't named in that synopsis.
No, this does not allude to the fact that this is a movie at all with a pregnancy or birth in it.
While the birth and the pregnancy is incredibly important to this saga because the original series doesn't happen without them being born in this one.
Yes.
It is somewhat an afterthought.
Yeah.
In the story.
Yes, very much. So the movie is written and directed by George Lucas.
Also written by two other people who were not credited in the movie, John Ostrander and Jan Dosima. Jan being a woman.
It stars Natalie Portman as Padme Amidala, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker.
There's a whole bunch of other characters of various levels of importance, but these are the ones that matter most to the story we're talking about here.
The movie cost $113 million to make, and it took in $868.4 million at the box office.
A huge amount of money.
Huge audience.
Huge audience, yeah. Similarly, impressively, it got a 79% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 66% audience score. And I think a lot of that's just to do with the fact that it's a Star Wars movie.
So I guess a bit of backstory, this being the third movie in a trilogy, have Padme, who's
a senator in the Galactic Republic.
And Anakin Skywalker, who's
a Jedi. Young Jedi.
And so they meet in episode one.
This whole sequence of movies starts where Anakin's like 10 and he's a slave boy on a desert planet called Tatooine. This whole series is about him, effectively. Like, he's the central character because he is the chosen one. At least they think he's the chosen one, which is his ancient prophecy, where he's going to destroy the Sith and bring the Jedi, blah, 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 you know. It's highfalutin sci-fi stuff.
Yes.
In the first movie, it's revealed that he doesn't have a dad. And then another Jedi does some tests on his blood and says, oh my goodness, he's got the highest midichlorian count ever. Midichlorians being a new thing that was invented for that movie just basically means he's a very special boy.
Especially in what way?
Well, he doesn't have a dad. So the Force,
immaculate conception?
The Force, which is the mystical science fiction fantasy thing in this movie, in the Star Wars. I'm sure everybody knows what the Force is, so I'll just talk about, like, it's very pop culture. The Force conceived him.
And then by the second episode,
Amidala and Anakin met in the first episode. And then during the second episode, they re-meet. Like, they had this, they were both very young. Amidala was, I think, 16, and she was the queen of the planet that they met on. Anakin went off to be a Jedi, and he learned all these things about not supposed to have any attachments to people, or things, even. And she went off, became the senator for the planet called Naboo, to the Galactic Republic, the Galactic Senate.
Right.
He's now a young, dashing hero, and she's a renowned senator. Yeah, they meet, and they have a secret romance, because he's not allowed to have a romance.
Then, at the end of episode 2, they get married, yeah, secretly, which leads us to episode 3. Why did you bring this movie to the podcast?
There's a birth in it, obviously. So this movie came out in 2005, so I was quite young and had very little. There's some interesting stuff. Weird birth scene is, like, added into the birth and the birth story by, not this movie, by future comics and people talking about it afterwards, the people who wrote the movie, mm-hmm, or possibly even deleted scenes. There's a whole bunch of extra stuff that goes around it. And I'm kind of interested to see your take on it once we go through the movie, through the birth sequence. And then I'll tell you about the stuff that other people have said applies and see if that changes your opinion.
Yeah, right. I saw this movie for the first time with you, but many, many years after it came out.
Yeah.
And I was a student midwife at the time when I saw this. And I think it does stick in my mind. I think this was probably one of the first science fiction births that I saw once I started midwifery.
Yeah.
It does sort of resonate a little bit for me there.
I think the other reason we're doing this one is because it is a solidly science fiction birth.
A long, long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Let's set our scene.
So we open to the traditional Star Wars crawl, which we won't read through. It basically tells you what we just told you about, there being a big battle happening. The galaxy is, there's a big battle happening over, like, the jewel of the galaxy, a planet called Coruscant. No matter who owns it, it's the capital city equivalent of the galaxy. And at the moment, we've got a giant space battle happening over the top of it with spaceships and droids and Jedi.
Pew, pew, pew. And we see the rescuing of Palpatine.
Let's just call him the Emperor because he's what he becomes. So the fleet has stolen him. He's holding him hostage in order to make Obi-Wan and Anakin confront Count Dooku, who's the big bad guy from the last movie, and also the other guy, General Grievous, who's in control of all the bad guy armies.
They lay some groundwork, I think, in this initial scene that Anakin is deviating from the expected ways of the Jedi.
Yeah, we have Obi-Wan who's like calm, collected, and like just focused on the mission and just wants to do the mission correctly, and Anakin who is brash and violent and just wants to get it done fast.
After the fight scene, he returns to...
Yeah, they land on Coruscant, the planet, to like their hero's welcome.
And he's reunited with Padme.
Yeah, Padme's hiding off in the shadows and they have a little conversation.
She says, "I'm tired of this deception. I don't care if they know we're married." And then goes on to tell him that something wonderful has happened. I'm pregnant.
And Anakin reacts with a... I find his acting in this to be quite indecipherable. He has an emotion and then says, "That's wonderful." Anakin is clearly in love with Padme. Padme's clearly in love with Anakin.
But there is this really awkward moment in that scene. And he says to her that he doesn't want to talk about it then and there, which could be... because there's people around and he doesn't want anyone to know what's going on. But she presses him a little bit further about, "Well, I don't know what to do." And he just says, basically, no, let's not spoil the moment.
This is the happiest day of my life.
Yes.
Yeah.
They start making plans to run away together.
And go back to Amidala's planet and hide out in the countryside and have a baby. We have some weird, some moments in, I think, they're Amidala's quarters. But it's not clear where Anakin lives in this entire movie. Like, whenever he's in a, quote, home setting, he's in her place.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're living together secretly or if she lives there and he lives in the Jedi Temple and just sneaks out.
She also starts showing quite quickly.
Yeah.
It's almost there to remind everybody, oh, and remember this, she's having a baby.
Yeah.
Because there's, I guess, so much else happening in the movie that it's token of remember.
They have some smirchy, kissy love talk here too about how beautiful she is and how he's like, "No, you're so beautiful." And she's like, "But love has blinded you." It's, smooshy, smush garbage talk.
Early in the movie, we have the first of a couple of nightmare...
crazy birth dreams.
Yes, except that it's not Padme having the crazy birth dreams. It's Anakin. He gets these visions of Padme screaming
in childbirth.
It's not immediately clear, but then...
the first one has her screaming and a baby crying.
Yes. She's saying, "Help me." He doesn't tell Padme.
He wakes up from his nightmare and kind of just walks off to meditate, is the implied Jedi thing that he's doing. And then she comes out to see what he's doing. And he doesn't want to tell her.
He doesn't want to tell her because he thinks that it's a premonition of her dying in childbirth.
Yeah, in the previous movie, his mother had been captured by people called Sand People or Tusken Raiders on his home planet, and he had dreams about her dying. And then they eventually came true. She died, and he was there. He kind of just assures him, "It's not real, don't worry about it. It's just a dream." And he's just stuck on the she's going to die in childbirth. He says, "I won't let this dream become a reality."
He goes off to Yoda.
I feel like there's something I should mention here. Throughout this movie, he's very chummy with the Emperor. We saw it when he rescued him, and we see it in the meet and greet on the landing pad. And we see it throughout the movie that they're very chummy, that they know each other very well. I think that's relevant, but I'll reveal why I think that's relevant to this story a little bit later on. So he goes to Yoda, talks about the visions with Yoda.
The premonitions. He says, "I won't let these visions come true." But Yoda isn't all that helpful, really.
He basically tells him the Jedi advice, which is don't get attached to things. Prepare yourself to lose the things that you love, sort of thing.
Yes. And obviously Anakin's not telling Yoda what he's just saying. "I'm having these premonitions.
Someone in my life."
Yeah.
What I did like in the next scene after that is there's some war briefing happening and Anakin's late to it. There's no reason why he's late to it given to us, but I like to think he's late because he was being a good daddy and being at the OBGYN, being at the obstetrician with his wife. There's also the bit here about Obi-Wan mentioning to Anakin that the Emperor wants to see him, but also cautioning him about how the Emperor is a bit dangerous and seems to be seeking more power when he doesn't really need it. And then in the next scene, the Emperor points Anakin to the Jedi Council as kind of a spy. We also see like seeds of distrust between Anakin and the Jedi Council because they don't trust the Emperor.
Anakin's not getting the advice I think he's hoping for from the Jedi Council. He's already sought the ear of Yoda. And he says something to Obi-Wan at one stage about his premonitions, but they're not telling him how he can fix it.
Yeah.
And not long after that, we see the Emperor talking to Anakin about what ends up being the dark side of the Force. There are ways to save somebody from death. They're not Jedi ways. They're
evil, nasty Sith ways.
Sith ways.
And he tells him a story of Darth Plagueis, who could create life or save life, but that Darth Plagueis died.
More premonitions. They get more detailed. Padme being supported in childbirth by Obi-Wan, but still dying.
Yeah.
And she's just getting more and more visibly pregnant throughout this movie.
In the next scene, she looks quite pregnant. The passage of time in this movie is not really clear because we have so many cuts and so many disjointed things, and people travel from planet to planet, but we're not really sure how long any of that takes.
No.
So we could be weeks along here, or we could be months along here.
It's all in the theatre of war. It's hard to know. Timeline is tricky. Sort of, I guess, midway, get another scene of Anakin talking to Padme about being a Jedi and questions if he is the Jedi that he wants to be.
Yeah.
And then he finally tells her, I've been having these premonitions of you dying in childbirth. And she says to him, I'm not going to die in childbirth, I promise you. And he says, no, I promise you. And that's where it all flips. That he's now determined to learn the ways of the Sith to save her. No matter what, he's going to protect her and their unborn child, even if that means giving up all the good things that he's learned thus far. So then the movie comes, the pathway to the dark side, which is aided by the Emperor. Anakin never says to the Emperor that he's married and expecting, but the Emperor knows.
So I might reveal a few things that I think.
Yes.
That I've either thought or read about this whole movie.
Please.
So the Emperor is like this shadowy figure who's playing both sides of the war, is responsible for the bad side of the war, like the separatist side of the war and the good side of the war, and has somehow bent the entire Senate to his will and is getting more power from, like, they're just giving him power left and right. So he's kind of this unlimited power figure. And I think that the movie, without telling you it's what it's doing, what's happening here is the Emperor either knows through spies or paying attention or through dark force magic, everything about Anakin's life. He knows Padme exists. He knows that that's a button for him. Mm. Like, it's a vulnerability. And he knows that she's pregnant. He knows all of these things. So he's given him visions of her dying.
Yes.
This is not the Force doing it. It's not his magic. It's Emperor's magic influencing him because he wants him as an apprentice. So he's playing on his vulnerabilities and then removing his support structures by doing all the anti-Jedi, pitting them against each other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically just to keep him isolated and unsure and scared. None of this is expressed fully in the movie, but it makes a lot more sense when you think about it that way. Yes,
definitely.
We've got some more war at this point where Obi-Wan goes off to a different planet to fight General Grievous and he beats him. Yes. That's what really matters for our story here. And
we get lots of scenes of Padme at home, really worried, not articulating exactly what she's worried about. Possibly she's at a point in her life where things are going to change dramatically. She's about to have a baby. She can also sense that something's wrong with Anakin.
Yeah.
Because he is starting to change, not only in behavior, but also in appearance.
Oh, you noticed that, huh?
Yes.
Tell me what you mean.
The beginning seems really well kept, really polished. And as the movie goes on, less so.
Like he's got messy hair and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be something as dramatic that I didn't notice as he was wearing white at the start and now he's wearing all black.
Well, he does get to a point where he is wearing all black all the time, but I think he wears dark colours pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
But it does get darker.
Yeah.
And he just gets more sullen and moody. So then I think we get to quite a pivotal moment in the movie where the Emperor has a fight with
Anakin, and the Jedi Council learn that Obi-Wan has killed General Grievous and that the bad guys have been defeated. So the Jedi Council give Anakin the task of telling the Emperor, because then what the Emperor will do will tell them more about what they need to do, what the Jedi Council needs to do in response. Whether or not he hands down his power will tell them if they need to step in and do something drastic. Anakin goes to the Emperor and tells him General Grievous is dead, hurrah. And they have a bit of a turn here where the Emperor kind of reveals himself to be a Sith because he's the one with the powers that Anakin needs. And Anakin draws his lightsaber on him and decries him as a Sith. And then kind of just leaves, saying that I'm not going to do anything, I'm just going to go tell the Jedi Council.
So we get to a fairly critical scene where a Jedi called Mace Windu fight the Emperor.
Yeah, full on lightsabers.
And Anakin walks in on this fight.
Yeah, so the fight reaches its climactic point where Mace Windu has him up against the wall, or at least appears to, disarms him and has him at knife point, blade point, and Anakin arrives. And there's this who will you choose moment will you choose the Jedi or do you choose the Emperor and therefore choose your wife? Because that's how he's positioned it. The Emperor's using Force Lightning on Mace and he's blocking it with his lightsaber, which turns the Emperor from a normal looking man into like a pile of sludge, which is consistent with how he looked in the original movies. Mace is about to finish the job, leans back for a big swing, and Anakin cuts his arm off and knocks him out the window to save the Emperor. All the while the Emperor's being like, I'm too weak, I'm super powerful.
And it's at the end of that scene that the Emperor says to Anakin, and henceforth you will be Darth Vader.
Yeah, he's now Darth Vader.
And he sets about on his evil way.
He is ordered to go to the Jedi Temple and kill all the Jedi there.
There was part of that scene that made me really sad. Well, he's killing a bunch of Jedi.
Yeah.
But then he goes to some part of the Jedi Temple and he kills, we don't see it, but it's implied, he kills all the little baby Jedi.
Yeah. The younglings.
The youngling, toddler age through to preteen.
But he's doing it for love, Emma. He's doing it for his baby.
Yeah, except that I just couldn't fathom that you could do that when you're about to have your own youngling.
The rest of the fight across the galaxy plays out where the Emperor gives Order 66, which is basically the code that all the clone troopers across the universe have been given to kill the Jedis.
Yes.
And we see scenes and scenes and scenes of Jedi dying. The important ones are that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda survive.
We also have a scene of Anakin. So at this point, Anakin goes to say goodbye to Padme, so that he can go off and finish the war. She's very much looking pregnant by this point. And very shortly after, Obi-Wan goes to meet her and he tells her that Anakin has turned to the dark side and that he's killed all the younglings. And at that point, which seems like quite late in the piece, Obi-Wan works out that Anakin is the father of Padme's baby.
Seems like he hasn't been paying attention very much, has he?
No. So then Padme, in her heavily pregnant state, gets onto a spaceship with C-3PO.
She's really worried about Anakin, so leaves her personal bodyguards behind and leaves with just C-3PO. Golden shiny droid.
Yes, to fly to
Mustafar,
where Anakin is. It's this big volcanic fiery place.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is where some of the most important like character stuff happens during the Riviera and all of like the reveal of everything.
Yes.
So they land. Anakin's been busy murdering people on this planet. This is where all the separatist leaders are. And he's just murdering them all. He sees the ship that Padme is in land and races to meet it, welcomes her with a giant hug. And she relays to him what Obi-Wan has told her about. He said that you were evil, that you killed your younglings, that you've gone off the deep end, basically.
And questioning, is this true and why?
Yeah.
To which he says, love won't save you, Padme. Only my new powers can do that.
I wrote down that quote too. He really reveals his quite nuts now, I would say.
Yeah.
He is like throwing away everything in his life, all the goodness, all the nice in his life, just so he can save Padme. I kind of think that he doesn't even know if it'll save the babies at this point.
No.
I think all he cares about is his lady.
And she says to him, Anakin, you're breaking my heart. You're going down a path I can't follow.
And he says, Obi-Wan has turned you against me. And then he appears behind her.
Oh, that's right, because Obi-Wan had
stowed away. So he's furious, engulfed with rage. Padme has brought an assassin to kill him. Obviously, he assumes that she did it on purpose.
Yes.
And then, he starts strangling her because she's to blame for this problem.
So this woman that he's gone to the ends of the galaxy, essentially, to save, he's now putting her life in danger.
Chokes her and she's unconscious.
Yeah, she collapses on the floor. So then Anakin and Obi-Wan can have it out.
Yeah, and in this scene, but like the prelude to their long combat, they like circle on the landing pad. And Anakin does not check Padme at all. He chokes her. She drops to the floor. He focuses on his new target, which is Obi-Wan.
And Obi-Wan, you actually do see bent down and check.
Checks her pulse.
Yes.
Checks that she's not currently dead. It doesn't do much with that information. Leaves her on the landing pad, but also he's got a deadly opponent.
Enter big fight scene.
Beautiful, big music and lava and
Lightsabers.
And I think it's really important in this scene to note that they're fighting. They're on a building that's got science fiction to stop it from melting in the lava, which they destroy as they're fighting. So they're on this building that is covered in lava. And they both know Padme's on the landing pad of this building that we are sinking into lava. And none of them stop.
No.
Well, maybe Obi-Wan wants to, but can't. But Anakin could very easily say, pause for a minute, I'm just going to go check on the lady who I did all this nasty stuff for.
Obi-Wan essentially defeats Anakin.
Yeah,
essentially because at that point Anakin is on fire.
He tries to jump over Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan cuts off two of his legs or feet and one of his arms. Interestingly, the arm that he's got left was cut off in a previous conflict with somebody else. So now he's got one robot arm and he's laying next to a pool of lava on fire.
On fire.
Pretty gruesome.
Obi-Wan rushes back to the ship and Padme's been moved to the ship, I assume by C-3PO.
It's not clear. There were service people on the platform, but I would have run away as soon as I saw the Jedi's fighting, personally.
Yes. So she's now semi-conscious on board the ship.
She asks about Anakin and Obi-Wan just kind of doesn't answer.
Yes. So then we have Anakin rescued by the Emperor, so we know he's not dead. Obi-Wan takes Padme to a medical center.
On some asteroid, it's not really explained where.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know what? Because no. To me, it wasn't clear.
I think it's assumed that because the people who rescued her are two Jedis and a son, that they've just gone to somewhere remote that has medical facilities.
Yes.
They've just gone out of the way.
We're in this weird hospital place and Obi-Wan is in the corridor. Can see into a hospital room with Padme inside and she's laying flat on a bed.
Science fiction bed.
Wearing all white, a very long gown. And she barely looks pregnant. And I don't know if that's just her prosthetic was not very good for that scene or I don't know, something a little bit odd. And in the corridor, Obi-Wan's now been joined by
Bail Organa.
And they're being told by somebody, I would assume a doctor, that Padme has lost the will to live.
It's a robot doctor. It's a droid of some kind. The exact quote is, for reasons we can't explain, she's dying. She seems to have lost the will to live.
And then reveals that she's pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
Which has not been revealed before now.
Yeah.
And that they'll need to operate urgently and they need to save the babies.
Oh, that's so terrible. She's dying of unknown causes, but we have to save the babies.
Yeah. And then we cut to a scene. So she's still in the same room. They've now put up a drape, except that it's hard, concertina-type metal.
It looks like a cone, sort of, with her in the
middle. And it goes from sort of her waist to her knees.
Yeah.
Gets bigger and bigger as it goes through. So small at the waist, quite open and large at the knees.
Yeah.
Her knees are up and open, as if she's in stirrups.
Stirrups, yeah.
She's got Obi-Wan at her head as her support person, and then she's got floating robot midwife at the end.
Yeah.
And robot midwife looks a little bit odd. Compared to some of the other droids and robots we've seen in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, some of them are a bit bonkers, but this one...
It definitely looks like friendly medical design rather than hard metal and plastic, which is what most other ones are.
Yeah, friendly, but also incredibly maybe sterile. Leaning into a sort of, like, nerf fantasy.
Yeah, sure.
But then has forcep hands. I say forcep hands. They're not a direct copy of the forceps that are used in birth, but they're sort of like, instead of the ends of the arms coming out into hands, the ends of the arms come out into these sort of scoops.
Yeah,
like baby scoops. Long, flat ice cream scoops.
So presumably, this droid is doing the operation that we got told about before.
Yes, but between her legs.
Yeah, she's between, the robot, is between Amidala's legs with her scoop hands and no apparent other equipment, just what is equipped on the robot.
Yes.
And then, schlorp, one baby comes out.
Yeah, so Padme's screaming.
Screaming.
And then the midwife robot present a baby.
Also, not talking in a normal language. It says, like, Odide Booba.
Yes.
As if... Anyway, whatever, that's Star Wars for you.
Obi-Wan seems to know what they're saying.
Yeah, it's a girl.
And then, very quickly, the robot goes back into saying, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. And then Padme starts screaming again. Second baby's born. It's a boy.
What do you think the operation was exactly?
I don't think it was an operation, per se.
So is she in labor? Traditional standard human labor?
No. No, she's not in labor.
Is it?
Maybe
is it
she's been induced, but probably not. Science fiction
magic induced?
Maybe in science fiction world, you can just go into the vagina and scoop babies out with your midwife robot scoop hands.
And that's not particularly consistent with regular Star Wars fiction. If this was Star Trek, there's plenty of times when they've used a transporter to just magically transport babies out of uteruses. Star Wars doesn't do that.
No, and she's involved in this birth, or at least she's feeling the painful effects of the birth.
Yeah.
If it was like an operation, like, so if we're thinking that this is an operation akin to a cesarean section, then she's draped wrong for that.
Yeah, they're going in the wrong direction. They've got the wrong tools.
Yes.
Everything's wrong.
Those babies are definitely coming out from between her legs.
Yeah.
There's really only one exit between your legs.
Maybe this was a world in which Caesar didn't get the first cesarean and they figured out a better way to do it. And we just haven't gotten done yet.
I mean, maybe.
Whatever's going on here is very strange.
Yes. And so while she's giving birth, we're then having these scenes over to Anakin also being operated on.
Yeah.
Also by robots.
Yeah. Except he's getting much nastier operations done where they're just like stapling things to him and...
He's also screaming, to be fair.
Yeah. So this also is not equivalent to the best medical science available in Star Wars land, because in Star Wars land, there's this thing called Bacta, which is like the magic solution you slap on any wound and it fixes it, basically.
Uh-huh.
And they don't do any of that for Anakin or for Amidala, to be fair. Usually it's used for external wounds, but I don't know, maybe you can cure a broken heart too. They're treating him very nastily. And would you like me to expound on why I think that is?
Yeah.
There's a few things here. Why the Emperor chose to operate on him in this fashion is because he's now lost the Jedi Order. He's going to be told, regardless of whether or not it's true, that his wife and kids are dead. He has nothing left. So he needs a constant reminder of all those things that he's lost. lost all that pain so that Anakin's always in a state of, I must follow my leader.
Right, and to, like, feed the rage.
Yeah. On a second level, this is, I think, a fan theory more than anything else, is that the reason Amidala has the no will to Livy's is because Anakin is stealing her life force to survive himself.
Right.
He, like, started choking her and never kind of stopped. Right. Kind of always stayed connected and kind of always took her will to live so that he could survive, which is not consistent with most of his characterization. Like, he's doing all these things to save her, but what else the hell happened with Amidala? Why would she not want to live when she's just had two beautiful kiddos?
So then, yeah, we have the scene of him emerging as Darth Vader.
Yeah, traditionally styled Darth Vader.
Yeah, as pop culture knows him. And then in contrast, go back to Padme, who is in a room with her twin babies and Obi-Wan and has no excitement, no interest in those children at all.
She says her last words, which are, they're still good in him, they're still good in him, and then effectively flatline.
She just sort of closes her eyes and turns her cheek over on the bed and
goes back to sleep.
Is dead.
Except she's dead. No medical attempt to save her at all.
No. And so then Obi-Wan is left holding two babies. I'll point out, are newborn looking babies.
Yeah.
And I think are twins. They do look very similar. They're never in shot together. So it is possible that one baby that's sort of put in a different blanket a couple of times.
Mm.
So yes, we have a boy and a girl twin and Obi-Wan left to try and figure out, what am I going to do?
What am I going to do with these two babies? Yeah. Does that make them identical?
No, because they're boy-girl twins, which means that they are fraternal twins. So fraternal twins happen when you have two eggs. They get fertilized separately and implant separately in the uterus. They grow together, but they have their own placentas and their own amniotic sac. Identical twins, and there's a few variations of identical twin, but identical twins are the same egg that gets fertilized and then separate. Those babies, sometimes they have their own placenta and own sac each. Sometimes they share a placenta but have separate sacs of the placenta, and sometimes they share a placenta and a sac.
Okay.
But those babies are always the same sex. So if you've got identical twins, you'd have two girls or you'd have two boys. Whenever somebody has boy-girl twins, it means that they were their own eggs.
I guess we don't really have any idea aside from that about anything else about their twinness.
We've seen Darth Vader emerge and the Emperor tells him Padme and the babies are dead and that...
He killed them.
That he killed
them. In your anger, you killed her. I don't think he mentions the babies outright. There's this other thing that supports the whole energy leeching thing, which is that at no point in this movie does the Emperor lie to Anakin. He always tells him a version of the truth.
Yeah, right. We see Obi-Wan and Yoda talking about the safety of the twins and they decide that for their safety, that they're going to get separated.
I'm not really sure what the logic is behind this because nobody knows they exist anyway, and those that do know don't know that they're Anakin's.
So Leia gets sent to...
He goes home with Bail Organa to his family on Alderaan. Bail mentions that he and his wife had been trying to have a baby for some time, so it's like a happy thing to receive for them because then they get to have their...
He says this specifically, we've been trying to have a girl.
And then Luke gets shafted because he gets sent to Tatooine, the poorest planet in the universe, to be with his kind of step-uncle and step-aunt. I had to puzzle about the lineage here because it's a little bit of a complicated history where Anakin's mum was a slave, got sold to a man who freed her, and that was one of this family. They were together for some time and then she died, and he had kids before her. That's who Luke gets left with.
And there's no explanation about whether or not they wanted Luke or whether they were really prepared to take him. We just have this scene of Obi-Wan arriving on this desert-esque planet and passing Luke off to a woman who, I mean, doesn't look disappointed. She looks quite pleased to receive this cute, tiny newborn baby.
Yeah.
But there was sort of no...
I'm not even sure that these people knew Anakin existed. Like, there's no necessary reason for them to have had that relationship discussed.
Yes, yeah. But they take in the baby anyway. So we don't see any sort of anything of the babies beyond that.
No.
Then we see a funeral procession of Padme laid out in sort of an open...
procession thing.
Yes.
Yeah, very pregnant looking. And you pointed out that...
they want the universe to know that she died pregnant. And the baby died too.
Which I had never put together, but it makes sense that that's what the lie... that's where the lie should start.
I just thought it was funny that she looks more pregnant in the funeral scene than she did during the birth scene.
Yeah.
Because in the birth scene, in the hospital the whole time, you can barely tell. Then in this funeral procession, it's well and truly there. And that's really where this movie wraps up, is these two little babies going off to their new families. Oh, well, then we see Darth Vader building...
the Death Star.
The Death Star.
Yeah.
So I guess everything's being set up for the original trilogy.
I do have to point out that this movie kind of ends with men traveling across the galaxy to hand off babies to
Vader. It does, doesn't it? Very much so. Here you go.
You should be happy about this.
And I mean, they do look happy, don't they?
Yeah.
So was it realistic?
I am trying to find any way in which it was realistic. It was realistic in that they had some kind of intimate coupling and a baby was created, or babies were created.
The question when it's a science fiction movie is not so much about is it realistic, but is it plausible?
Star Wars is pretty big on the gimmies, on the science fiction nonsense that you're just supposed to believe. Like, the Force exists, and laser swords exist, and spaceships exist, and there's a very long list for Star Wars. None of it's about prenatal, postnatal care, though.
Well, we really don't see any pregnancy care at all.
Yeah.
Or anyone really tending to her in pregnancy.
Yep.
There's obviously then concern when she's dying and that the babies need to be born.
I take it not being presented as meaning it didn't happen. That might be unfair, but that's what I think.
Well, I mean, she didn't know that she was having twins.
Yeah, how could you not know that if you're in science fiction land? Actually, we don't see her reaction to the twins. Obi-Wan didn't know she was having twins.
I feel like if she knew she was having twins, she would have told Anakin, and that would have come into the storyline at some point.
That's fair.
Because she's been completely open with him throughout. You know, yeah. Obviously they're keeping the marriage and the pregnancy a secret from everybody else, but they're being open with one another. And I feel like
this is news. Big news.
Even the big question marks we've got over how those babies were born, in that they're saying that they're going to operate, but then the robot midwife has got force of hands and seems to be catching babies from the vagina, except that Padme's not in labor. There's so many questions.
I don't think I can rate it plausible. I think
it's not plausible, but it's also not realistic.
Yeah.
Did it treat birth positively?
Her pregnancy was basically not treated at all. It just existed as a background to other things.
It very much existed, though.
Yeah.
It was very much on view, but there's never any celebration of it. There's never really any mention of it from any of the other characters that interact with Padme. To be fair, though, when you're watching this movie with a lens focus on pregnancy and birth, you really notice how unimportant she is.
Yeah, she's a poster.
Interactions.
She's a poster on the wall in this movie. Also the only female character in this movie.
Yes.
Human or otherwise, I think.
And then we do see two women at the end who receive babies.
True. Neither of them had lines.
No, neither.
They do have names, though.
It's not a female-friendly movie. No. As in, it doesn't portray anything positively about women and about pregnancy and about birth.
Doesn't pass the limited Bechdel test.
No.
Doesn't get close to it.
I think pregnancy and birth are only in this movie because those characters, the twins, need to be born in order for the original trilogy to happen.
In a way, though, I feel like that should mean the movie should be about that. They're the most important things that happen, because next is about the savior of the galaxy, Luke, right?
Worse yet, actually, you could argue that this treats pregnancy and birth very negatively.
Yeah.
Because all of the premonitions of her dying in childbirth, and then that Anakin on a pathway to destruction, because he's hell-bent on making sure she doesn't die in childbirth.
And his way of making sure of that isn't, let's go see the best medical specialist in the galaxy that he has access to as being one of the best Jedi.
Yes.
It's, let's do some magic malarkey.
Yes, let's go to the dark side and play in the realms of death, and then really destroy all the goodness and destroy Padme as an outcome.
I don't think it portrays birth positively.
Portray birth positively and goes as far as making it incredibly negative.
It's either something to be scared of or something to be manipulated by.
Yes.
Was it entertaining? I have to say that the movie itself was entertaining because there's lots of lightsaber fights and they're fun.
Yes, look, Star Wars is entertaining.
Star Wars is a popcorn movie that you don't think too hard about, fine.
And it is an entertaining movie in that it's got its place in the sequence. It's important to the original trilogy. It fills all those Star Wars needs that Star Wars fans have. It is evidently entertaining in the amount of money that it took at the box office.
Yeah, and the ratings are pretty good.
So yeah, it is entertaining. I was less entertained by this movie on this watch because I think I was focused on the pregnancy and the birth. And I've seen it before and I sort of know where all these events fit in the grandest sequence.
Yeah.
So I was sort of ignoring some of those key plot points to focus, but in the focusing got really bogged down and disappointed because of everything we discussed before, that it doesn't treat pregnancy or birth well at all.
Yeah, as a birth movie, not entertaining. As a science fiction, swords and guns movie, sure, fine.
And that's what we have to remember here, that this movie is part of a bigger...
This movie, how long was this movie? It was like 2.5 hours thereabouts. It's got a lot of content in it. Like, it does a lot of war.
Yes.
And you can see the content that they had to cut probably was all the Amidala content got cut, basically. All of it except for where it was key for Anakin's story.
The end goal is what's key here.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, her dying is his motivation. Those babies being born are very key to the next movie.
Yeah.
You know, if she has to die because of that, then so be it, I guess.
Yeah.
In the writer's eyes. She had to die, right? When we think about that, because if she lives, then what?
Yeah, there's a million different ways to handle this, though. They're at war, taking away all the movie parts that we've seen, because when you're rewriting a movie, you don't have to keep anything. Amidala gets pregnant and then gets trapped by a separatist plot, and then the ship explodes and her babies get separated from her, and then everybody thinks she died, but she's on a planet somewhere. There's a million different ways to handle this where she doesn't just die.
In the original trilogy, do they ever say to Luke or Leia that your mum died in childbirth?
I'm pretty sure the only line discussing mother is between Luke and Leia in Return of the Jedi, because they don't know that they're brother and sister to begin with, where Luke reveals to Leia that they're related. But first he asks her, do you have any memories of your mother? And she says something along the lines of, no, not really. All I remember is that she died when I was very young and that she's very beautiful. The way she says it always made me think that she had personal memories, not given to her memories. I think when it was originally written, and Luke has no memories of his mother, is the other part of that story.
They both know they're adopted.
Luke definitely does, because he calls them uncle and aunt. And Leia, I'm not sure.
Which she must do, because she says that she remembers her mother being beautiful.
Luke always has Skywalker as his surname, but Leia has Organa as her surname. Which means that in this plot to hide from the most powerful dictator in the universe, his child, they left him with his surname, just on a far-off planet.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I never thought about that.
Darth Vader never thought, I should check the books for another Skywalker. He just didn't think about that.
Oh, dear. What a roller coaster.
That was an interesting movie to watch with this lens. I enjoyed doing that.
That's it for today.
If you would like to contact us or find our socials, please check the show notes for links.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Birth on Film.